This is El Puente Podcast, POC conversation at the intersection of race, sexuality, religion, politics, art, music, and everything in between. Don't just sit there, stand up. Don't just listen, join the conversation with Kim, Dave, and Michael. This is Michael.
This is Dave.
This is Kim.
And we're here to talk, and you're there to listen. But you can also talk back. The only kind of talk back that we like is from you guys. So,
how do we know when they're talking back?
They can email us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's in our show notes.
They can hate Twitter us.
Yes.
See, I was going to clairvoyance. We can feel when they're...
Oh, that's true.
We can feel you when you're thinking about us.
Kind of like brain kegels. Anyway.
Mock off. Okay, hashtag.
brain kegels.
So we're a podcast of multiple points of view coming together. African-American, Latino, Latinx, queer,
women,
feminist, everything.
And we're here to represent those who feel like they're not being represented all the time in media. Let's do a news pop. Time for the news.
Yes.
I think we were going to call this segment, we changed our mind, right? We were going to call this What Everybody Talking About. What do you guys think about that? This is What Everybody Be Talking About. Is that too much? Is that too many words?
Yeah, that's too many words. Maybe just...
What's shorter than the last one, which was Pop the News and Feed the Children.
God. Yeah.
Pop the News and Feed the Children. I kind of like that one, too. I don't know. We're still working on it.
Yeah, anyways.
But anyway, what everybody be talking about this week is what's going on with social media and social media companies out there. And specifically, two companies come to mind in relation to us people of color. Mm-hmm. Facebook and Grindr, you may have heard or read recently. Big controversies in the news. Both companies came under fire for the past 2 weeks for sharing their user data with third-party companies. Mm-hmm. And one company in particular, Facebook, really under fire. In fact, their CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, was brought before Congress to explain himself. Mm-hmm. And
they made him put a suit on.
He put a suit on. He cleaned up really nice.
Booster seat.
Had a little booster seat action going on. A lot of people think he's a robot, and they say that on social media that he seems like he's an android. All of his movements and...
He seems more like an apple to me, but...
He's just a very strange man. But the controversy is, of course, that the company that he created is under fire right now because a lot of personal user information is being unwittingly shared with third-party companies. Specifically, the company in question this time is a company called... Cambridge Analytical. It's a data firm that's related to President Trump's presidential campaign from 2016. And it was discovered that the data of millions and millions of Facebook users was unknowingly and unwittingly shared with Cambridge Analytical to target messages to those voters. And some believe, in some ways, to distort their opinions and affect the outcome. Pretty controversial. So old Mr. Zuckerberg was brought before Congress to explain himself. And a lot of people think he did a really good job, but only just to buy his company a little bit of time to figure out how they're going to prevent that from happening again.
Yes.
The other company in the news you may have heard about, especially you queer folk, is Grindr. Grindr having a very similar... revelation this week. It was discovered that, and I think even more shocking than Facebook, that the HIV status of millions of its users were also shared with third-party companies. And unlike Facebook, who claims they didn't realize that information was being unwittingly compromised, Grindr actually knew that this arrangement existed and that information was being shared. It was reported by BuzzFeed recently that about 3.6 million users worldwide had their HIV statuses shared with a company that claims they use that information to target messages and testing reminders to specific users. At least that's their explanation of that. As you can imagine, very controversial.
Of course, it's unconscionable.
Outrageous. I mean,
unconscionable. Outrageous. In fact, the CEO and the social media guru over at Grindr made a video. I don't know if you guys saw this video. Posted it on Grindr. Posted it on the website. Basically begging their users for forgiveness, and that he claiming that this would not happen again and that this would change. So a lot of controversy going on out there in the news related to social media and stuff like that. Just begs the question, you know, do we really know what's going on with our personal information when we use these social apps? What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I mean, so many people are on social media one way or another.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of information they can glean from that. And you never know what their purposes are.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Grindr, they don't get forgiveness and they don't get a second chance. I mean, that is so low.
That's low. That's pretty low.
Yeah, that's unforgivable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like to hell with patient doctor confidentiality. I mean, you just have to put all your shit out there
right.
on an app, you know? It's like,
wow.
It's horrible. It's amazing. Absolutely horrible.
Well, what do you think about the people who say that, you know, when you are on a social app like that, let's take Grindr for example, what are the benefits of sharing your HIV status on an app like that?
Well, just for practicality sake, in that instance, I mean, that's a dating app, and so, well, and a hookup app, and so people find that information.
Dating app? I've never gotten a date on Grindr.
He was trying to be all,
he was trying to be gracious. It's a dating app. Yes. Okay. It's a dating and hookup app. Yes. Yeah. Go on. Continue.
And so some people want to know that information, and I guess they wanted to have it on there so it's more convenient to be like, okay, I don't have to ask this person this question. It's already there.
It's already there.
And I know whether or not.
It's on the table.
Yeah. But you should have the right to choose that option.
Yeah.
To choose who knows that.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, and that's the sinister thing about what's going on with these companies is that we, as users, are entrusting our information with them, and on the back end, they are using that information, they are monetizing that information and sending it to other actors, other parties, and that's where they make their money. Mm-hmm. You guys remember when Facebook went public years ago, mm-hmm. and everybody was wondering, well, how is it that this company is going to make money from this product? You remember back in the day?
Yeah.
And Facebook found a way. They basically said, if we're going to be free on the front end to use a service, we got to make money on the back end. Mm-hmm. And the back end became, we're going to sell your information, your private information to somebody else.
Yeah.
And my God, look what Facebook has become, right? I mean, I know you guys, this has happened to you guys, where you're on your wall and something that you just dreamt about last night suddenly appears on your wall.
Yes.
How do they do that?
Well, some of it is like they're connected to advertisers. So like if you look up something on Amazon.
Voila.
They're connected. And so they're going to put ads on there to get you back to Amazon to actually make the purchase that you didn't make.
Yes, indeed.
I do wonder about the listening, though, because I was speaking about
the rumor. The rumor that they are listening through to your conversations through the microphones on your phone.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
You believe it?
I believe it.
Yeah. I was speaking to Joey, my nephew, about suits, and he was talking about he needed to buy one. He hadn't even looked it up on his phone or anything, but I was at their house on their Wi-Fi, and open up Facebook and I'm getting all these advertisements for suits, and it was just like that's just too much of a coincidence.
Well, in relation to that question, Mark Zuckerberg was asked that very question by a congressman when he was before Congress. And literally, they asked him, "Is it true that you guys listen in on conversations?" And he denies it. So technically speaking, he does deny it, folks. Whether we know it's true or not, I think they've already kind of developed technology that they can actually read our brains. Because because I'm telling you, I'm just going to admit, Facebook now sells me like all the clothing that I wear nowadays. Like, they know what I like. They know my fashion. They know exactly how to get me to buy shirts. Mm. I don't think I've gone to a retail store in years now because I buy literally everything I wear off Facebook now. Isn't that crazy?
Wow, that is crazy. I just don't have that deep of a relationship with Facebook. I just, and it's probably because of that. I mean, I have, after getting hacked, my bank account being hacked, you know, I mean, I just, I'm definitely more mistrustful. But it even freaks me out that on my cell phone, in Maps, it suggests, like, we go to rehearsal, and they suggest the address of the babysitter on Maps.
They know it now.
They know that I go to the babysitter after rehearsal. So now when I pull up Google Maps, it puts this, it's the suggested address. And so I'm just, I guess that type of thing is just making me very hesitant towards participating in all the social media.
The fact that they know every movement that we make, everything that we buy.
But that was not even like a social media thing.
That's just
they know where you're going, where you've
regular
been.
Regular old tracking.
Yeah, but it's just having that in everyday life that also makes me take pause in social media.
It's the constant
well.
Intrusion into our private lives. That's a great example. It's like they know every movement we make. They know everything we want to buy. They know where we go to work, what time we eat. I mean, my cell phone is following me to, you know, my morning breakfast spot. You know, their Facebook's telling me, hey, I see you're at Bolden Creek again. And, you know, I mean, pretty soon they're going to start, Facebook's going to start saying, hey, are you going to have the eggs and toast like you had yesterday? I mean, what is happening here? Anyway, I think it's just getting out of control, but it is good to see that at least our Congress in this case is at least not asleep at the switch. They did call Mark in to explain himself, and this is definitely something everybody would be talking about this week, so we wanted to bring it up today.
Yeah, and I did see that a handful of people that I know on social media have publicly said, hey, send me a message to my cell phone because I'm leaving, I'm getting off of this.
Yes, there's a big movement to drop Facebook, I think is the hashtag.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about that a little bit later in the show about how difficult it is going to be to do that if you're one of the people who decides to drop Facebook. So we'll pick that up in a second. All right, so... Sorry, I didn't mean to play that. So I made a sound effect for us, guys, and hopefully you guys use it. This is our Clap Back Heard Around the World segment, and this is a segment where we talk about social media responses between either celebrities or people who are not celebrities, taking the opportunity to put their messages out there and, if need be, clap back when somebody needs to get clapped.
Yes.
And this week, we're talking about two old white men who are acting like 16-year-old girls in high school on Twitter. I'm, of course, referring to your president, y'all's president, not mine, President Trump, and the other guy, James Comey, former director of the FBI. And they've been clapping back recently, back and forth on Twitter. Like, you know, real clapping back, like being dirty. Have you guys seen these tweets at all?
I have not.
Okay, let me read a couple here. So this was Comey back, and of course you guys know about Comey. He was fired by Trump as y'all's president is trying to obstruct justice. And Comey was, of course, investigating his collusion with Russia and stuff like that. I know I'm supposed to say alleged collusion, but come on now. Anyway, Comey was fired rather rudely, I might say. Do you guys know the story about how he was fired by Trump?
I lose track of all the firings.
There's too many firings. There's too many firings. Well, this was a juicy one. Comey was flying across the country on FBI business. He was literally in the plane. He landed in California and learned on CNN in
the airport, ladies and gentlemen, that
he had just been fired from the president. In fact, he couldn't, as I heard, couldn't even get back on the plane back to Washington because he was no longer a government employee.
Wow.
Now that is some shiesty shit.
That is.
Anyway, as you can imagine, Comey was pretty salty for that. And on May 17th, Comey had the first clapback. He said, "Mr. President, the American people will hear my story very soon, and they can judge for themselves who is honorable and who is not." So, and of course, what he was referring to is the fact that he was writing a book, which I believe came out this week. And I am about to get my copy of it. The book is called A Higher Loyalty, Truth, Lies, and Leadership. It is his memoir that goes over his experience dealing with Trump in the couple of very short time that he was, you know, working with Trump in the FBI and all the salacious, juicy details that we all want to hear. As you can imagine, y'all's president was not happy about that book coming out, so he decided to clap back on Twitter, too, as he always does. And this is what he said.
Good God. Wait. Let me brace myself. Okay.
Should I do the accent?
No, please don't. David,
liar.
No.
Sorry.
No.
It's like PTSD for us to hear really his voice. He said, "James Comey is a proven leaker and a liar. Virtually everyone in Washington thought he should be fired for the terrible job he did until he was, in fact, fired. He leaked classified information for which he should be prosecuted. He lied to Congress under oath. He is weak and untruthful slime ball, who was, as time has proven, a terrible director of the FBI. His handling of crooked Hillary's case and the events surrounding it will go down as one of the worst botched jobs of history. It was a great honor to fire James Comey." Ouch!
Wow.
Wow, y'all. Now that is not only some clapping back mm-hmm, on Twitter, mm-hmm, but yeah, it's another reminder why we really have to get this maniacal maniac out of office as soon as possible.
And then we have the other maniacal person taking his place. Mike Pence.
Yes.
With his conversion therapy.
One maniac at a time, okay? We got to get one out at a time.
I know.
But, you know, the reason why this is such a crazy thing is because think about what this president is doing on Twitter. He's using his power and his influence to really intimidate people, belittle them, threaten them in some cases. Mm-hmm. And guys, we all laugh and joke because it's Twitter, but it's still like, you know, fascism.
I mean, just think of all those Russian bots he's reaching with his tweets. Now, what I find hilarious about this little clapback session with these two is like, since they're like old white men, does that mean they're clapping back out of rhythm?
Clapping back out of rhythm.
Yes.
You can imagine, or you could pretty much assume that anything these two do is going to be out of rhythm.
I think we should flood their tweets. I think the American people should stand up and just flood them. Flood all these tweets about what a moron he is, how they are ready to impeach him, and just shut down his account.
Well, what do you guys think in the battle between James Comey versus Trump? Who's up? Who's down?
Oh, I mean, obviously Comey's up, I would say.
Why do you think that?
Because he's going against Trump right now. Yeah. And like, there's so many people that will take that side.
Yeah.
And I think possibly because he has truth on his side.
Yeah.
You know? True.
Absolutely. True. Inside view.
I mean, and tonight there's going to be a really big interview by George Stephanopoulos on ABC News, in which James Comey will try to explain himself, specifically how he handled the whole Hillary Clinton email controversy, and his answers to the questions. Does he think that Trump actually colluded with the Russians? So, you know, I'll be tuning in for that and probably have something to say about that in our next episode. But for now, we'll just leave you with the clapback heard around the world between these two bitches, James Comey, and y'all's president, Donald Trump. Clap back heard around the world.
All right, now we continue with our segment, Opinions Are Like Assholes. Some don't stink. And to discuss some of their opinions...
that don't stink.
Correct. We have Kim and Dave here, of course. So we're talking about the whole idea of leaving social media, such as Facebook.
Drop Facebook.
Or drop it.
What's the hashtag? Drop Facebook?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Drop it like it's hot. Mm-hmm. And so we're discussing the pros and cons of something like that.
Is it even feasible these days?
Yeah. Yes. In the professional sense.
Wow. What do you think about that? What do you think about that, Kim?
I think unfortunately, I mean, like for me, using it for band purposes and things like that, it's a really great avenue to mm-hmm. connect with people, putting a face to your band. So, mm-hmm. I'd like to, before I broke up, I'd like to see my options, you know. You know how you do. You got to have somebody in the running in the wings, you know, before you do the full breakup, you know.
Your so rebound you guy.
Oh, yes, got to have your rebound. Get your so rebound I'd have to social know my media.
That's so true.
But then you got to have that breakup sex before.
Yeah. Give a good album that would have...
But you're right. I think, and that's why I think that like Mark Zuckerberg stands on such high grounds, because he realizes he's made a product that is so integrated into mm-hmm. our lives now.
Yeah.
Whether or not that was his intention or not, like that's what's happened. And to your question, is it easy to break up with Facebook nowadays? It almost seems impossible. I'm just thinking about mm-hmm. for myself. I use Facebook for so much stuff. Let me just run down a list. I use it for my news. It's my one-stop shop to scroll through and get my news from the websites that I follow. Mm-hmm. I use it to stay in contact with friends who are not in the same city that I'm in, and even the friends that are in the same city that I'm in. It's just such a great tool for my friends in Mexico, mm-hmm. who I see, you know, every year, but I don't get to see them, 9 months out of the year. And yet, when I go to Mexico every summer... It's like I never left, because I'm in constant contact with them every single day on That's Facebook. Okay. I get to talk with them wow. on the phone through Facebook. Mm-hmm. I get to video chat with them via Facebook. Mm-hmm. I use Facebook to buy my clothes, like I said, to buy my perfumes and my things that make me smell good, and all kinds of stuff is all via Facebook. And mm-hmm. so the idea of like removing my or disconnecting myself from that seems really, really hard. I even store all of my photos on Facebook. Yeah, it's my own photo
album.
That's
the hard thing, is all the photos, all these years of putting photos on there.
Yeah.
I connect a lot with my family on
yes,
there.
Yes, I was going to say that. Mm-hmm. You know,
As a visual artist, I mean, my career was made on Facebook, basically. That's how I network. That's how I get to know other artists and curators and learn about opportunities online in other states and other countries. It's like, without that, like I would not be where I am at this stage in my career. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. And can you, what would it look like if you were to take that step to disconnect? What would be next? What's to Kim's question?
I mean, obviously people did it before Facebook.
Right.
But I just feel like at this point the pace of it would be ridiculous.
So can I slow. Be yeah. devil's advocate. I mean, one thing I'm thinking, you know, it's sometimes we'll know people across the world and they're our friends and we're connected, but then we don't know our own neighbors. And I was just thinking about, you know, the app Neighbors or whatever it's called.
Which one?
It's an app where the people you're connected with the people in your neighborhood and you post things.
Oh, yeah.
That's also a good idea.
Next Door.
Next Door. Thank you. I couldn't remember. I called it Neighbors.
That's the one I'm developing is going to be called. Neighbors.
I'm so bad with that. But yeah, I mean, maybe it'll give us some time to get to know the people right next door to us and explore getting to know some people right in our backyard.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like we're going to be... kind of going back to pre-internet days, almost, even like,
yeah,
what was that like? It's hard to even fathom anymore, because like we've been so immersed in it for so long,
yeah,
and that's it's molded the way we socialize
and communicate
and present ourselves to the world.
Yeah, when was the last time you guys actually sent an email to somebody?
Like for non-professional stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for non-professional.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
to communicate. Yeah. Remember that's that used to so be true. That used yeah. to be the thing. It's yeah. like, hey, yeah. did you get my email?
Right.
Now it's like, hey, I sent you a message on Facebook.
Yes. Or right. text. Or texting.
And I texted you, but yeah. you didn't. I know you're not going to answer your text, so I, you know. Yeah. But I knew you'd be on Facebook.
I saw that you looked at the text and it opened it, yes. but you didn't reply. So yes. yeah, just
yes.
Yeah.
I saw, I know you were on Facebook, and I saw you posted a picture at 4:05.
Yes, I'm looking directly at Dave right now.
Well, I for one, I don't think I'm ready to break up with Facebook. I know that the CEO of, what is that company, Telsa? Edmund Tesla. Musk, Tesla. Mm-hmm. I know that the CEO of Tesla recently took his company off of Facebook, mm-hmm. Which was pretty amazing. You think about it. Out of concerns for secure privacy and protest. But I don't think I'm ready to break up yet. I just think that it just makes life too easy to do too many things that are essential to my life right now. Mm-hmm. And the way I guess I address my concerns with the privacy is I just try to keep the amount of information that I do, you know, store on that site about myself as to a minimum as possible. You know, I think that probably a couple of days I've been a little drunk and maybe clicked on some things that I shouldn't have clicked on. Now they know where I went to high school, where I went to college, and all this other stuff.
Okay, I was thinking other stuff, but okay.
Yeah, no. I try to make sure I don't put anything too bad on Facebook, you know. But they're always
except watching. For that one time.
What was that?
Uh-oh. You liked a photo, and then you had to run.
Oh my gosh.
What happened?
So, okay, I'm going to tell the story. I don't know if we're going to keep it in the final edit. One day I was at work, and I liked a photo that it was a friend of mine who I guess he was just sitting down with a big old bushel of marijuana as his crotch hair.
Oh my
god.
And
I think a bong.
And he was naked. And he was
naked. And a bong as his like penis. So it was like a very phallic with a big old thing of pot. And I thought that photo was so hilarious. So of course I had to like it. Well, little did I know that I guess I had some algorithms set up in my settings where the world knew the pictures that I liked and posted the photos that I had liked on my wall. So here I am at work and I'm like looking at my page and it's like, Dave liked this picture of this guy with big old thing of pot and a big old bong and he's naked right here. And look, world, look what Dave likes.
Which is not inaccurate.
which is not inaccurate, but I don't want them to know that. And I was like, how do I get that off of there? And of course, I had to like run home. And so, you know, long story short, I had to rush home and, you know, get that video off of my wall.
Yet another reason, you know, maybe breaking up with Facebook, not so bad. I mean, I talked with a manager at Payless, and she said one of her employees was caught calling in sick, but then she caught her on Facebook at some restaurant. Hanging out with her friends when she was supposedly sick, you know, and didn't come in. So, yeah. I mean, you gotta be, beyond being smart, you know, there's just those times where you're just a little inebriated.
Had a couple cocktails.
Well, this next segment is about Amara La Negra.
Amara La Negra.
Yes, what an amazing woman she is.
The segment is called what? This is a new one. We haven't done this yet.
No, we haven't.
Quote and tokes and memes and crushes.
Yes.
Ooh. We have a crush.
Yes. We all have a crush. Even the gay boy over here.
Yes, I'm in love with Amara La Negra, but probably not for the reasons that you guys are thinking. No, if you don't know who Amara La Negra is, she is a performer, Dominican, and she, I believe, I haven't really checked out her music, to be honest with you. I know she's very into hip hop, very into R&B, Latino pop, and she's more known nowadays for a controversy that arose out of her appearance on the VH1 show Love and Hip Hop Miami, in which a viral video has gone out of her confrontation with the producer on that show, a Puerto Rican.
Or a producer, not the producer.
A producer on that show, a Puerto Rican music producer, who told her basically that if she wanted to get further in her career, she should probably lose her afro, she should probably play down her blackness and try to be a little, as he said, try to be a little bit more Beyonce and a little less Macy Gray. Ouch.
Wow. That is so offensive and racist.
Racist, straight up.
It's just racist. You should never water down your ethnicity that for to get more fans. That's a lie. It's a lie to who you are. It's a lie. You know, I mean, the thing that people appreciate about her is her honesty. That's what you all love about her.
Yeah. So why is she your crush, Michael?
I love from what I've seen of her personality,
yeah,
like, I just tend to go for that kind of
feisty black woman.
Feisty black Latina.
No, yeah, but
so feisty black Latina.
So, yes, exactly. Like, she has like that strength that both Latina and African American women, you know, are. It's a stereotype that they have, yes. But like in this case, like this convergence, and her skin is like amazing. Mm-hmm. Like it's just the shade of it, like.
And she's just beautiful, dark, beautiful woman.
Yes.
Yeah, my crush on her is because I feel like I saw that clip, and I have to say, it was mm-hmm. really shocking to see mm-hmm. the blatant racism in that clip. But she really took it and used the opportunity to further conversation about racism, even within the Latino community,
yes.
which I really appreciated. She's really bringing a lot of attention to the fact that there is colorism in Latino communities. And they, just like in here in North America, we have to deal with the fact that descendants of Africans are viewed in a lower way, I guess, mm-hmm. than people who have lighter skin. And that colorism is pervasive in a lot of cultures, even in Latino cultures. And she's really tackling it head on. She's saying, you know what? I'm not going to change to be more successful. I am going to be me. I'm going to rock this afro. I'm going to rock my music. And you all are the ones who are going to have to change your attitudes. Yes. And I just really appreciate her strength in that.
Definitely. Yes. Yeah, no. It
takes a lot of courage. I mean, I remember when... I cut out all my weave and went had my afro for the first time, and I had so many people, oh, why did you get rid of your weave? Oh, you were so much prettier with your weave. And you know, you really have to stand up with courage for your own sense of beautiful and say, you know what? No, I'm going to change the standard of what is beautiful, and it's not gonna... It's all about choice. If you want to have a weave. But if I want to wear an afro and be beautiful and just be proud of that ethnicity and the fact that that is my natural hair, then, you know, people are just going to have to get over it.
You're going to have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's very sad that European standards of beauty, even today, are still seen as the default.
Mm-hmm.
beauty standard, you know, and it's like, it doesn't matter if it's North America or Mexico or yeah. Puerto Rico mm-hmm. or the Dominican Republic.
It reminds me of this past summer when we were in Mexico City. And do you remember this? And we went to that one restaurant and the waiter was a darker, more indigenous looking Mexican gentleman. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
No, what happened?
And he
was I drunk at the time?
No, we're heading our way to towards that.
Oh, got it. Yet. Okay.
Yeah.
That's probably why I don't remember. What happened?
And he came up and he was just like, well, I mean, you know, being black when you're in Mexico, you get a lot of attention anyway.
Yes. But that's a whole other topic.
Yeah. That'll be a whole other episode.
I'd like to get on that topic.
Yeah.
But this guy was just so like happy that you were there. And he came and he brought us our drinks and everything. And then he started talking to us and he was like, yeah, here. Well, he figured out that you know Spanish,
mm-hmm.
and he said the statement in Spanish, like, you know, here I'm like you because of my skin. I'm dark here, and so people treat me differently too. And like, he just had like this, dude, you don't remember that?
Oh, I wish I do because it sounded like a really awesome, tender moment.
Yeah.
Are you sure I wasn't drunk?
Oh,
how awesome is that?
Oh. Yeah. And so he had like this kinship with you through your skin, and I thought that was such a great...
Yeah.
Yeah, like I feel like there's more of an innocence whenever there's stuff dealing with your race in Mexico than obviously here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. When I got to Guadalajara this last time, last trip that I made there,
mm-hmm.
and I'm getting off the airport, I'm getting off the airplane and I'm on the bus going into the terminal, there was a Mexican African-Mexican man on the bus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know this, there are African descendants in Mexico. They're African-Mexicanos. Mm-hmm. They usually are on the East Coast, but they are there. Very rare. And there was this beautiful African-Mexican man on the bus. And he immediately made eye contact with me. Mm-hmm. And we just had a moment because yes. It was like kinship of our Africanness of in course. This Mexican mm-hmm. environment. And he was so appreciative just to like make eye contact with me. Yeah. It really spoke bounds with me. It really spoke a lot to me about yeah. how like, you know what I mean? Just that need of that contact was so prevalent, so yeah. obvious. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important for people like her to be around, as you know, she doesn't have to be a role model, but it's nice to have that type of identity out there for young Black Latinos or
yes.
just any brown or non-brown, just people
just,
in general.
Just people to be recognized for who they are. You're right. Just yeah. to, for those little girls and boys who look like her and say, yeah, I can... If there's nothing wrong with my skin color. There's nothing wrong with the way I look. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, and she's an example of that. That's wonderful.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah.
So, Amara, we love you.
We yes. love
Jews.
You're our crush.
All right. So now we're going to continue with a segment that we're starting up, where we try to bring out points in history that are either ignored or should have more light shed on them. Shed on them.
You said shed, right?
I did say shed.
Okay.
That have more lights shed on them. The segment is called Real History Has Curves and Shades. So it's about bringing out, you know, the history of people of color and...
yeah. The things that you don't see in the history books usually.
Exactly, exactly.
Although this first one might be, actually, our first entry into this segment. This week in 1964, the actor, the immortal Sidney Poitier, became the first African-American male to win an Academy Award for Best Actor. Do you guys know what movie that was? Cue the Jeopardy music.
I was going to guess that it was... Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Yeah. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, the movie that a lot of people know. Mm-hmm. But I believe that movie was made in... Let's see. 1967. So you are 3 years too soon.
Oh.
The movie was called Lilies of the Field, and this was the first time that an African-American male had won an Academy Award, which you can imagine was a big, big deal. Yeah. Does anybody know who the second African-American male was?
Ooh, I'm trying to go through history.
Was it Danny Glover?
No, never won.
No.
Denzel?
Denzel Washington!
I was thinking Denzel first, but man, that's a big gap.
That's a big gap. Does anybody remember the name of the movie?
Oh, yeah, it was the bad one where he was a bad cop.
Bad cop, baby. Bad cop done good. Training Day was the name of the movie.
And, well, my mom brought up a good point about that because she says, you know, why did it take him being like this evil, horrible character for him to get it? You know what I'm saying? It's always like even when... oh gosh, what's her name?
Yes, the one who played the Monsters Ball, Halle Berry. Why is it that we have to play these thugs, these like prostitutes in her case?
Yeah, or a bad cop. Why is that always the negative stigma?
Not that there's, we're saying there's a negative connotation to sex workers, but we're just saying
no.
It's society, like society playing into that, the stereotypes
of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The only time that we really broke out of that was when Whoopi Goldberg won for playing that clairvoyant.
Yeah.
And Ghost. Do you remember that movie?
True. Which was genius.
Which was amazing. Yeah. I have a whole episode just to that. But no, Sidney Poitier won 1964, Lilies of the Field, big deal as you can imagine. 1964 was also the year that the Voting Rights Act was passed in this country. So you can imagine the times in which this award was being given to this really beautiful, dark-skinned Black man that a lot of, you know, social change, social upheaval was happening. Do you guys know what the movie was about?
Only because you told me earlier.
This is from IMDb. It's about Homer Smith, an unemployed construction worker, heading out west. He stops at a remote farm in the desert to get water when his car overheats. The farm is being worked by a group of East European Catholic nuns, headed by the strict Mother Maria, who believes that Homer has been sent by God to build a much-needed church in the desert.
Cue the porno music.
Cue the bounce, the bounce, bounce. Dear God has delivered this beautiful Black man to this covenant of nuns to build all of this stuff for them. Do you guys think this movie would fly in like 2018, 2019?
It would have to have a completely different twist to it. Yeah,
that'd be a hell to the no.
Like it would like at one point just like shift into Get Out.
Yeah. They're like, get out, these nuns are fucking crazy. But no, I saw Once You Go Black. I saw the preview of it, and you know, it does look a little dated, just the story, you know. I mean, there's a certain aspect to, you know, and maybe it's addressed in the film. Maybe we should rent this movie and just check it out and see like how does it play, because, you know, it just seems like a dated relic to a time when blacks were seen in a certain way, and you know, we're here to build and all these things for for the white people, and you know, thank God for that.
He wasn't a mammy, you know.
No, he wasn't that.
You know, he was
the first Oscar won by an African American.
He was a servant, but it wasn't like he was in that master's house.
No, he wasn't in the master's house.
And picking cotton and stuff.
In fact, he was a very outspoken character in this. He was a very, you know, he talked back to Mother Maria. He wasn't taking no jive from her. And that relationship was very played up from what I've seen in the clips that I've seen in the movie. So maybe that's what audiences loved about it in 1964. They saw that it was the future of race relations in this country. So,
there you have it. She looked kind of hungry. She might have been the little taste of okay.
She was licking them lips.
Let's come up with some mixed babies.
Chocolate. We need to get our mind out of the gutter. Anyway, congratulations. 1964, Sidney Poitier, this day in history. First African American male to win an Academy Award. Hopefully there'll be many more.
Yes. Well, this next segment.
Take two on that.
Yes, please. This next segment is Ay, mi gente.
This is, where we call out our own folks.
Yes, yes. I actually was in HEB again.
Oh.
And had an encounter with some white folks, and it was the cluelessness again. Am I off topic here?
No, this is what we talked about last week.
But you obviously have an update. So
yeah. I have an update because
now keep in mind, Kim is married to a white guy.
Yes, so I'm you know, everybody's a little bit racist.
Before you send your comments talking about how racist Kim is, her husband is white.
That's right. Okay. Thank you. Okay, I love white people. Obviously, yeah. I have a baby
with one.
So, but yes, it's just sometimes there is a cluelessness. Sometimes there's just a cluelessness, and I literally almost got run over with the basket.
Oh my gosh.
And I looked, I mean, I had this look in my eye, like my eyes got real wide, like, really? And she says, oh, I'm so sorry. Grandma right behind her then proceeds to almost walk into me. I'm like, am I invisible, people? I mean, I'm the darkest one in this aisle and y'all can't see me that you gotta run me over with a basket. Come on. And they were very polite after they almost ran me over, but I'm just like, are you really? Maybe it wasn't a white thing. Maybe it was just they were busy and not paying attention. So, I don't know.
We literally talked about that last week. Yeah. Exactly what we just talked about. So, that is crazy.
Hope we didn't manifest that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it might have been a manifestation.
Well, this week, I wanted to just kind of touch on Latinx culture and racism against African Americans in particular, and how that's really, really frustrating on my part and embarrassing, to be frank. I'm embarrassed whenever I experience things like that where people are saying things that they should not be saying, which is obviously just a reflection of what they think.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, part of it, like, I think we've been set up to kind of be against each other culturally in this country, because if we're at war with each other, then that leaves the people up top running things from room to do what they want to do. and kind of get us out of the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like we need to be more aware of that, be conscious of it, and not do it, and then call people out in our own cultures when they do things like that.
What kinds of things have you observed or noticed?
One thing that kind of comes to mind is so a friend of mine was I'm trying to figure out how to describe this without giving out too much information. I was working with a local small business here in Austin, kind of doing like a little internship thing, and it's a Latino company, Latino family, and he's also Latino. And at one point, they made some comment about, you know, I believe it was like welfare, and dropped the N-word. And my friend was just like speechless. Like, he was like, okay, maybe I misheard. Like, because it was pretty, you know, blatant. He was
come
like,
again?
Yeah. And then they proceeded to repeat it again.
Wow.
And he didn't know what to do because, like, he was there in their home, their business. And so he said, he just, like, finished up. I was like, you know, I'm not feeling real well, or I'm going to leave. And he never went back. And we had a conversation about it afterwards. Like, he felt like, well, should I have done something, said something more? And he I mean, that's a very traumatic thing to, like, be a part of.
Yeah.
So, it's hard when you're in shock, too, to mm-hmm. respond right mm-hmm. away.
Yeah. You
just get blindsided by it.
It's funny. I was having a conversation with my barber the other day, who is Latino. Mm-hmm. And he was bringing up the fact that here in Texas, as has been my experience, Latinos and blacks actually get along a little bit better mm-hmm. okay, than, say, and even other places in the country. Yes. For example, in Los Angeles, he said where he was from, the Latinos and blacks actually really don't get along, and the racism is even worse between those two communities over there. But it's a little less bad over here in Texas. And I agree with him because I grew up in San Antonio, and my experience has always been black and brown kids go to the same schools. Mm-hmm. We live in the same neighborhoods. You know, they may be a little segregated, but, you know, we're still in the leftovers of the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. And we are, you know, we have to get along. When you arrive from Mexico, your chances are you're going to live in the ghetto next to the black kids. You're going to go to the school with the black kids. Mm-hmm. And that can either create friction or it can create some kind of cross-cultural mixing, which yeah. I think happens a lot in San Antonio. So I guess what he said to me that kind of gives me hope about what you're talking about mm-hmm. is that his experiences like mine has always been, we just get along a little bit better. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And when he gets visits from Latinos from Los Angeles, he's always asked, well, why do you like the black people? Ugh. And he says, it's just because, you know, we're just down, you know? I listen to hip hop, they listen to hip hop, and we get along, and, you know, everything's kind of more relaxed.
Yeah.
So I think it deals with where you come up mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. you know, the communities you're raised in. They're not all awful.
Yeah, no, yeah. I hear you. I mean, I do see some more separation. So I teach at the elementary school level. It's my day job. And I do see the separation in the parents. There's some that overlap and they interact, but, you know, pretty much they stick to their own. But on the other end, I see their kids, like, seamlessly interacting and being best friends and
yes.
connecting in the classroom, on the playground, and things like that. And it's like, gosh, I hope that continues and, you know, becomes the more dominant idea or approach.
Well, I think there's a lesson. I'm sorry.
No.
Well, I think there's a lesson in that my belief is that racism comes from fear. Mm-hmm. And the older you are, the more fearful you become. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why young people are so fearless in that, you know, in integration and things like that, is because they're not afraid so much of things that they don't know yet. You have to be taught to be fearful of other yes. people.
Yes.
And they haven't been taught that lesson yet, you know. And thankfully, our schools are giving them a place where they can integrate, where they can get to know other cultures. And then they're realizing that there's nothing to be fearful of.
Yeah, I think that's the difference, is that our kids are being exposed to a lot more global-mindedness nowadays. At least... You know, within the past 10 years, I mean, even relationships openly gay relationships. I see a lot more in, like, in middle school, where, you know, it's just, it's not perfect, but it's, I mean, it's a lot more open and talked about in an open fashion, and than I experienced when I was a kid. And so I feel like personally, I haven't had any direct discrimination from, you know, Hispanics. I actually have experienced the opposite, where I see a lot of blacks being racist against Hispanics.
I mean, gente, preach. Ooh. Yes, yeah. tell them.
And, you know, like, getting my hair done and always constantly hearing, oh, they're stealing our jobs and we already struggle so hard and here come these Mexicans, and I'm just,
yeah, same.
Yeah.
Same. I and even within my family, you know, hearing the Mexicans taking the jobs thing, and like, I'm just like, no, like, you do not get to sound like a Trump voter. Yes. we have been through too much struggle to not understand the struggle of others. Right. And we are just not gonna play that role.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of people are tuning into that. Yeah. I think that, you know, especially black people, you know, I think that there are people who take advantage of that, like Trump and his ilk would like us to believe that and to say that. Exactly. And they want us to believe that. They want us to sow division, like you were saying. They want us to be divided. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of black people, especially black millennials, are like, they're onto that game. They're not going to play that game. Definitely. They understand.
Yeah. Fortunately, I do feel like the youth is going to save us.
Yes.
But you know, and speaking of trying to bring all the everyone together, I mean, that's really what this podcast is about.
That is what we're about.
You know, this, our intersectionality, like, we all have points at which we intersect, and we have, you know, we can connect and we can build those bridges, los puentes.
And if we can do it, you can do it too.
Yes.
Now we come to Lecciones Learned, where we teach Kim some Spanish.
Yay.
Yes.
I said it in Spanish this week. Yay.
No, it's pronounced yay.
Yay.
There you go. So that's this Spanish. Week we were speaking. Okay, so if you were to take a guess and I were to say, how would you say that you are embarrassed?
In Spanish.
Oh my gosh. Embarrassamente.
And then you have our Italian lesson for the week. No.
Estoy. Would you say estoy?
So I am estoy.
Okay. Estoy.
And then embarrassed.
Embarrassed.
But like, how would you say in Spanish? Estoy.
Embarrassed.
See, then, and that's that, you were headed down that path.
There we go.
A lot of people think it's embarazada.
Estoy embarazada. Yes.
But it is not a cognate.
Oh.
Yes, because embarazada means pregnant.
Oh, yes. I don't want to say that.
You don't want to say that.
No. You might just want to rewind it so it's not even put if out you there say, in the air.
Yeah, if you say estoy embarazado or embarazada, people are going to say felicidades.
Yes.
¿Cuándo?
Yes.
¿Cuándo vas a tener el bebé? Porque they think you're pregnant.
Yes.
That is like one of the most common mistakes in Spanish 1.
Mm-hmm.
That students, high school students, make is they think that it is a cognate. And for those who don't know what cognates are, they're words that are similar in English and in Spanish, right? Mm-hmm. So they think it's a cognate, embarrassed, embarazado, but it is not a cognate.
No. So the correct way to say it is...
I have no idea.
Okay. Avergonzada.
Oh my gosh, slow it down.
You can say tengo vergüenza.
Tengo vergüenza.
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 Or estoy avergonzada.
Estoy
avergonzada.
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 That's good.
Avergonzada.
Mm-hmm.
Estoy avergonzada.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Oh my. Yes. Write that one down.
So what if you said...
There will be a test in the future, just so you know.
There will be a test. So if you said, estoy avergonzada porque estoy embarazada.
Oh.
That's the next level, kids.
Yes.
I'm embarrassed that I am pregnant. I definitely
That's what the Virgin
would be
Mary said.
At this beautiful age of 43.
Well, there you have it. That's what this week's Lecciones Learned, where we teach Kim some Spanish. And if she can learn Spanish, so can you.
All right, so for our final segment today, we are talking about eso, 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 which is where we talk about things that are positive, things that
positive
are a light in the darkness.
In the world.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to focus in on, again, those kids who are standing up for all of our rights, especially concerning gun violence.
And gun safety, gun control.
Yes, yes. And so the students from Parkland, one of the main voices is a queer Latina. And so we want to put a focus on that. Although, and her name is Emma Gonzalez, but there are not enough of her classmates being heard. So we want to push that. Dave knows a little bit more about this.
Yeah, we want to give a shout out to all the people, the faces you've probably seen, Emma Gonzalez and all the other students from Parkland who've really done a great service in amplifying this message of gun control and gun safety. But there are black and brown students at Parkland in particular who feel like their voices are not being heard. So we definitely want to give them a shout out too. We're talking about a group of kids who have started an online campaign started by a junior, Carlitos Rodriguez, who's Latino. And they've started a campaign, a hashtag Stories Untold, really telling the story of gun violence at Parkland, but through the eyes of the students of color there, because we know that their experiences may have been overlooked, shall we say, by the mainstream media. So hashtag Stories Untold. Definitely connect with the social media, hear what they have to say, and let's amplify their stories too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And Kim had a point earlier when we were discussing this topic.
Yeah. A lot of backlash came from Black Lives Matter. People thought it was a attempt to leave people out. And all of this comes out of trying not to leave people out. And when you recognize that there is a deficit, opening your awareness, opening your heart, and giving everybody a chance to be heard. All voices deserve to be heard. And I believe that in this instant, these brown people know struggle. They know discrimination. They are in the trenches, and they should be heard in this matter.
Definitely. Yeah. Yep.
Yes, absolutely.
As in any other topic in which we are ignored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shout out to you guys. Shout out to Emma. Shout out to all you you freedom fighters out there who are fighting on our behalf to try to change the status quo, to change the way things are so that we can all have a better country tomorrow. Big yes. Shout out to all you guys. Eso, eso, eso. As always, we are
Kim,
Michael,
and Dave.
If you want to give us some feedback or ask us questions or anything,
take us out on a date.
There you go. Yeah.
Y'all come give David some love.
What is that?
Love.
We're stronger when we build puentes to connect POVs of POCs. Thank you for listening.